This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. By 2020, there will be 1.4 million jobs available worldwide in computing-related fields. U.S. graduates are on track to fill a respectable 29% of those jobs, but U.S. women will fill just 3%.
Given that tech is among the fastest-growing economic sectors in the country, an organization called Girls Who Code wants to up the percentage of female participants. Their mission is simple: close the gender gap in technology. They do it by working with girls between 11 and 17 because that's where they say the gender gap in tech first becomes the widest.
It seems to be working. Girls Who Code founder Reshma Saujani has seen her organization grow from 20 girls in New York City 5 years ago to over 40,000 girls in all 50 states today. It's all in service to the organization's stated goal of creating the largest pipeline of female engineers in the United States. Lake Effect contributor Eden Herbert caught up with Saujani to find out more.
So basically in the 80s, you had about 37% of computer science graduates were women. And today that number is less than 18% at a time where there's like 500,000 open jobs in computing and technology. So we want to close that gap.
And what are the goals or values you're trying to instill in your participants? And what's really the need you're seeking to fill?
Well, look, I think right now so many more American women are the head of their household. You know, they're the ones who pay the mortgage, who put food on the table. And day by day, you know, there's more and more jobs that are in the computing field, and women are being left behind. And so from an economic perspective, it's really important to make sure that women have a chance at getting these high-paying jobs. I think the second thing is that technology affects everything we do. So we want to find a cure to cancer. If we want to do something about climate change, it's, you know, we need technologists. And if half of our population are opting out of being technologists, that's a problem because we need that innovation. And so, you know, we think that that's like another big reason why we want to solve this problem.
There are places like Silicon Valley and the Boston area that are seen as much bigger tech hubs than places like Milwaukee, like where we are. And we're kind of considered a little left behind on the curve. So I was wondering, how does that work for Girls Who Code, differing based on where it's being done?
Look, I mean, I think I think that while there's been a lot more tech growth in like Silicon Valley and New York and Boston, I think places like Milwaukee are like becoming booming tech sectors, again, because technology is a part of everything we do. And so that's why we have a 50-state strategy. We don't just want to be in the coast. You know, we want to be in the middle of the country. You know, I was born in Chicago, Illinois. You know, I have a special place in my heart for the Midwest. And so, you know, we have, you know, like probably over 10 to 20 clubs, you know what I mean, in Wisconsin. And so we're growing nationally, and we're really, especially right now, partnering with school districts and libraries and communities that are in the Midwest, that are in the Rust Belt, right, that are in places where not only is there an access gap, but like, entire industries are being replaced through automation, right? And so we need to make sure that especially girls in those communities like have a shot at learning coding. And Girls Who Code oftentimes from these communities is like the only place in space where they can do that.
And you're touching on the really big kind of backbone of what you guys do, how you operate, which is through the community support. But I'm wondering, how do your programs operate? Really, do you find any issues in cities that don't have as many tech opportunities like in Milwaukee?
You know, well, so we have two programs, right? We have these summer immersion programs. We build, you know, classrooms in tech companies and host them over the summer. So those summer programs are harder to establish in places like Milwaukee because there's not a tech ecosystem, but we're not letting that deter us, right? And we're still looking for partners to help build those, you know, build those summer programs. And then, you know, we have after-school clubs where we rely either on volunteers that come from industry or who know how to code to come into the classroom and teach, or we train a teacher. Like, you know, we have teachers who are art teachers, who are science teachers, who are, you know, gym teachers, who have a desire to learn how to code, who are, like, teaching a Girls Who Code club. And so, you know, to be honest, I don't feel like there is any impediment that we've reached besides access. So I think it's hard to be in a school that doesn't have Wi-Fi, right, or that doesn't have computers because you need a computer. and Wi-Fi to learn how to code and learn how to wireframe, but it makes it a little bit more challenging. So, but we're still kind of trying to figure out how to close that gap. And part of the way we're doing this, we have a 13-book series coming out with Penguin where, you know, we have a nonfiction book for girls kind of ages 9 to 12 where you learn kind of the fundamentals of coding and computer science. We're trying to figure out every barrier and kind of break through it.
And you talk about these after-school programs, even summer programs. There's so many that exist. How exactly are you getting the girls interested in your specific organization?
So the code is awesome. You know, I think that, like, girls have an amazing time. They make new friends. They learn something interesting. They build apps on problems that they care about, and they tell their friends about it. So, so much of this movement is a girl-led movement that girls have told their friends, like, hey, this is cool. Like, I tried it. I did it. I liked it. You should, too.
So you're relying a lot on the kind of the word-of-mouth approach.
Yeah. And but that's what we always say for us, we really, a lot of what we do is build a sisterhood, you know, and get, you know, get girls to they're learning a superpower that they want to share with another girl.
I'm wondering, now that you're national and you do have the name recognition, if it's any different in your recruiting process in terms of participants and both volunteers?
You know, I think it's only because we're super ambitious, right? We want to get coding to every single girl. And so, yeah, we get a lot of interest from people. But we want, you know, we want a girls to code club in every school, you know, and we want to teach millions of girls how to computer program. So, in that case, you know, we still have to do a lot of kind of recruiting work because I think the goals that we've set are really high.
Yeah, 40,000 in the first 5 years, right?
Yeah, and we want to get to 100,000 in the next year and a half.
Wow, and is that seeming very likely?
You know, I think it asked me in 6 months. But yeah, I mean, we always, I think it's important in life to set really high goals. You fail. But at least you're moving towards something that is, like, audacious.
And that's a perfect transition into the next question I wanted to ask, because in a lot of your interviews, you speak of this idea that we need to socialize imperfection and that a lot of advancements get held back because girls hold a stigma that they have to be perfect. So what process are you using to implement the socialization of imperfection?
It's a great question. So I'm, like, in the process of writing a book and doing a lot of research and thinking about this and talking to people. Look, I think the first thing is that, I don't know if you feel this way, but, like, I know for me, like, at an early age, I thought I was good at certain things and I was bad at other things. And that the things that I wasn't that good at, that I would never be good at them. And I, you know, but there may have been things I loved, like gymnastics, right, that I just stopped doing because when I couldn't get a cartwheel right the first couple of times, that didn't feel good. So I think part of what I'm trying to teach girls to do is, like, actually, like, don't pull yourself out of subjects or activities or opportunities where you're not number one, right? Like, sit in that space where you may just be average, but you love it anyway. And I think that that overcomes, like, this idea that there's a mindset, right, that I'm either fixed at doing something, or I'm either really good at doing something or I'm not good at doing something, and I can't learn to get better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So just to make sure I'm getting this right, through this process, you're explicitly identifying that there is, that perfection is the holdback in the progress?
I think it is. I think that we teach girls to be perfect. We reward them for being liked. We reward them for doing things perfectly. And so when they try something that doesn't go exactly right, they're not comfortable. They're, like, afraid of rejection, right? They don't raise their hand for things that they feel like they're not an expert in. So this means that they, you know, stick in careers that they should have left 10 years ago, right? That they feel kind of rejection and disappointment because they're not living a joyful life, because they're not doing the thing that they want to do. They're doing the thing that they think they're good at. And so much of this is, like, I want to unteach that. And not just for business leadership reasons, but I think for real health reasons. You know, there's a real, like, suicide epidemic that's happening. My friend Rachel Simmons is writing a book about this, you know, on college campuses, where you have young women who are literally killing themselves because they feel like they're not perfect. And we need to unteach that.
So There's one thing to be able to get up there and say that perfection is the problem, but do you think a lot of these girls are actually able to identify within themselves that there is a social stigma to never mess up as a woman, and that they're kind of all playing into that?
I mean, I think so. I've been trying. I did a graduation speech about this whole idea of credentials. You know, I spent my whole life really chasing, you know, a Harvard degree or a Yale degree. And, like, when I got all the credentials that I thought would make me happy, I still wasn't happy. And I was actually incredibly sidetracked in terms of, like, the thing that I wanted to pursue in my life, which was public service. So I think that, like, yes, I think that we are, as women, when we talk about it, become self-aware, like, wow, I really do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was on a panel with Veronica Roth, who was the author of Divergent. She was telling this beautiful story about how she was in a, you know, a voice lesson with her coach. And, you know, her coach kept saying to her, like, just let go. You know what I mean? Like, be free. Like, and she, even in a room of just her and her coach, she just couldn't let go. So she was so self-conscious of what her voice sounded like. So how do you unteach that? And I think you can. And I think part of it is just being aware of, like, wow, I do that. Like, I never knew for, like, 30 years of my life that all I was doing was, like, I knew I was chasing credentials, but nobody told me that that was wrong. That if I kept doing that, I would be unhappy. And so hopefully I'm giving a message to a lot of young women that they haven't really, that they know they're doing, but they haven't really heard yet.
Yeah, I have to tell you that while I was going through all of your interviews and reading about this specific topic about imperfection, that I personally have gotten so far and have realized that that is exactly what it is with me too, that it was this fear of not being perfect that's, like, probably stopped me from doing a lot of things. And it was really weird to be able to identify that, because I never wanted to put myself in that category before that. But to be able to say that, I think that's, like, kind of freeing a little bit. And
totally freeing.
Yeah, and after you can identify that and say, like, screw it, that's not going to be me anymore, I think that makes so much of a difference. So
I think so, too. That makes me happy. I think so, too. I feel like it's done that for me in my life as a 40-year-old, right? It's like I'm so much happier, freer, now that, you know, I don't care as much.
Yeah.
Right? Of, like, what other people think, or, like, if I look stupid doing something, or... You know, I don't know. I feel like I missed out on things in my life, right? Because I cared too much.
Exactly. And that's your whole point. Like, you don't want that to be the case anymore. You want girls to be just as confident as anybody else, to be able to say, I don't care about failing. I can do it just as well as anybody else.
Right.
So we talked about this a little bit, but I'm hoping you can go a little bit more in depth. What are you hoping each girl walks away from Girls Who Code with? And in terms of progress for your organization, how are you measuring your success?
Yeah. So I hope every girl walks away with, like, bravery and confidence and a new love of coding, or just a feeling like, wow, I did something that I thought I could never do. And she takes that philosophy and that strength and that puts that into whatever else in her life. You know, we measure success by how many of our girls are actually going on to major or minor in computer science, because that's the needle that one of the needles we wanted to move. And we're also looking at, like, what's the influence Girls Who Code is having on someone's leadership. Like, I have so many girls who are like, wow, like, this changed my life. Like, and it opened my eyes up to things I never knew. And it opened my eyes up to different opportunities. I made new friends. Like, I was feeling really self-confident. And I just, you know, it made me feel strong and brave and fearless. And, you know, that's powerful for us.
So in the end, it's not necessarily about making sure that all of the girls that participate in Girls Who Code actually go into coding or technology. For you, what I'm gathering is it's more about that they're walking away with all of this confidence that they should have already had.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's bigger than the coding part. Because the thing is, like, let's just say you go through a program, you minor in computer science, but then you go on to be, you know, a doctor, or, you know, you're an artist. And then one day you have an idea to build or create something that you know you're going to probably need some engineers to help you create or build. And all of a sudden now you understand their language. And so you feel confident in your idea and, like, putting your idea into life, because you don't feel like there's a language out there that you don't understand.
Now, from speaking with you, it's obvious that you have an extreme passion for helping women succeed. And I'm wondering, what is your next venture beyond Girls Who Code? Because I can't see you sitting idle.
Well, I really want to solve the problem. I mean, I'm super psyched about the work that I'm doing. I want to go really deeper into bravery. So I'm excited about my book that's going to come out in a while. I want women to, like, not only reach their fullest potential, but to feel free and liberated to be and live however they want to. And I want to, like, share some of the lessons that I feel like I've learned in my life personally and through Girls Who Code to help women do that.
That's a perfect wrap-up.
Good.
Reshma Shajani, thank you so much for joining us on Lake Effect. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Reshma Shajani is the founder of Girls Who Code, a national organization that hopes to close the gender gap in technology. You can find out more about the group at WUWM.com.